Please help me welcome Claire. She's from Fishtown, Philadelphia.
Hi, everyone. I'm Claire Keller, alcoholic. Grace of God keeps me sober. My home group is Fishtown Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a section in Philadelphia. I don't know, probably a few of you have been to Kensington and know where that is. I didn't mean anything by that, but my sobriety date is July 25th, 1989. I just had 21 years sober, like 2 weeks ago, and what a gift. I had absolutely nothing to do with that. I just wanted to thank God for that. This never gets easier. I don't know. Seems like the meetings get bigger. I didn't come to AA to get sober. I don't know anyone that came to AA to get sober. That always kind of blows me away. I know people that came to AA to get out of jail, to save their marriages, for a lot of reasons. Their PO sent them here. And when I got to AA, I remember people saying to me, if you're not here for yourself, you're not going to get sober. And that was not my experience. I didn't come to AA for myself. My family pretty much threw me into AA. And I had, like, people say it's a reservation. I had this thing in my head that I'll play along. And once they back off, I can drink again. And that was over 21 years ago. I haven't had a drink since my first AA meeting. I just want to thank this group for asking me to come here. I want to thank Jen for driving with me. I want to say welcome home to the new guy. Glad you're here. And I hope you find peace. I'm sorry for your loss. You know, unfortunately, being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you hear a lot of those stories. And it touches our heart because everybody knows what it's like to have a head if you're an alcoholic that will take you to places like that. And I always think people with time are going to get up there and they're going to be well. I'm probably the exception to that. I'll tell you what, when I got to AA, the only direction I took for 8 years was don't get too well too quick. That was the direction that I heard, and I ran with that. I got sober in Northeast Philadelphia in two clubhouses, and it's so crazy to me now to look back on how insane AA was to me, but I didn't know any other AA. And I don't, like, I kind of want to say that I'm not bashing AA. I'm just telling you my experience, and this is what it was like for me when I got to AA. I got sober in two clubhouses in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one was like kind of like a biker clubhouse where everybody had no teeth, tattoos, chains hanging from their wallet. They were beating the crap out of each other, and these were the women. And seriously. And the other was a clubhouse where the theme of the clubhouse was that you could do whatever you want, just don't drink. And they did whatever they wanted. There was a lot of gambling going on. There was a bookie in the room. There was a loan shark still there. You could buy a leather jacket in the back of the room in the middle of July. Gold chains, like, just crazy. Stickers for your car. And that was the only AA that I had ever known and that I had gotten introduced to when I got here. And so for many years, I suffered from untreated alcoholism, and I didn't know I was untreated because I thought the treatment for alcoholism was just don't drink. And when I got to AA, God had separated me from alcohol, but the disease was progressively getting worse inside my head. So that internal condition was getting worse and worse and worse, and I had no idea what was wrong with me. Because it seemed like everyone in AA was doing whatever they wanted, and they weren't drinking, and they didn't seem to suffer like I was. And if you're the real deal alcoholic, without a spiritual experience, I believe that you will suffer and pay prices if you compromise these spiritual principles. And that's what was happening to me. I started to pay dearly in AA for things that I was doing that weren't so spiritual. And other people seemed to be getting away with stuff. And I started to think, in AA, what's wrong with me? And it just seemed like, you know, I was so alone and so in my head, and like nobody else was going through the emotional ringer. And I'll give you an example. I was 11 years sober. No, just let me remind you, I was not one of those who got too well too quick. But at 11 years sober, and I had been through the 12 steps at this point, I had stole money from work, and I couldn't sleep. And see, that's the thing about this, you know. My head would not stop. And by noon the next day, I was back in this clubhouse knowing that if I didn't go make this financial amends, that I was going to get loaded. Because it was absolutely unbearable to be in my head and my skin. And so I did what we always did in AA. I put my hand up and I shared about it. Because that's what I was told to do. Because that's what was working for a lot of people. And after that meeting, one of the big guys, or I thought was like, you know, this big guy from AA, said to me, "Yo, kid, how much money did you steal?" And I said, $150. And he said, "That ain't nothing." Like, as if the amount of money had anything to do with why I was so messed up. And so if you're an alcoholic, you might be able to identify with that kind of going through the ringer. Because even though I wasn't growing along spiritual lines, I was still praying to God every day. And that's what happened to me. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to pray. And then once I started to pray, even though I wasn't living right, and I hadn't experienced recovery or the 12 steps, I knew that, I guess I knew the difference between right and wrong. And people would say things to me, you know, if you don't know what the right thing is, you know what the wrong thing is, so don't do it. That was the kind of direction I was getting in AA and spiritual giants. But I picked up a drink when I was a kid, and I don't think I had any idea what I was up against. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I was probably 10 years sober before I knew what alcoholism was. And I'm not kidding when I say that. I thought I had a drinking problem when I came to AA. And I thought that for a really long time in AA, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. Because left untreated, this disease will progress, and it'll get worse and worse and worse. And Bill Wilson said, you know, the alcoholic, the problem with the alcoholics, I'm going to really mess this up, aren't I? Centers in your mind, you know, the disease of alcoholism. And if you think you come here with a drinking problem and the drink is removed and your life gets better, that's not what happened to me. My life became more and more and more unmanageable the longer God kept me sober. I did not know what was wrong with me. You know, I was telling Jen on the way up here, I was 3.5 years sober and I was in a mental hospital. And I was lighting cigarettes off the wall at a locked board, 3.5 years sober. And I'm thinking, maybe if I just sponsor a few people. Like as if somebody wanted what I had. Let me add her. Sponsor me. You know, it's so crazy. And, you know, I thought time qualifies you to be a sponsor in AA. Because that's what I was told. You know, I was told men with the men, women with the women. I was told make sure your sponsor has more time than you. And, you know, And I didn't know any better. So, you know, I was basically, you know, like just aimlessly walking around AA with not much direction. And I don't even know if I would have taken it if I got it, you know? How about that? I did get a sponsor when I first came to AA. And I didn't listen to a word she said. I thought, what does she know? She's gay and her girlfriend ain't even cute, you know? And I need a boyfriend. I was thinking, I need a boyfriend. I had a lot lot of solutions to alcoholism for a lot of years. And they didn't look anything like that stuff hanging on the wall. One of my favorite speakers, he talks about alcoholism. If left untreated, it'll go underground and it'll start popping up in food sprees, sex sprees, shopping sprees. And I want to say that I've experienced every one of those things and still didn't know like what was wrong with me. I never heard about anybody talking about a spiritual malady, talking about a hole in the soul. You know, I honestly didn't for years in AA. I just heard people's war stories or people talking about drinking. I wasn't here in a program in recovery. And maybe I wasn't listening. Like I said, I'm not here to bash AA. I didn't hear it. I wasn't surrounded by people. Like this group is like a huge, like, I didn't even know there was this many people in Quaker Camp. Like, you know, like pockets of enthusiasm, it seems like it's been popping up all over, you know, and here's the thing about the groups that I got sober in. If people walked into an AA room where I got sober and they had a big bulk with them, they got bashed. My little brother and this guy Chris started a big bulk study back in like 1994 in Northeast Philadelphia. And the amazing part is they would walk in the clubhouse. They'd be like, here comes Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, you know. And they tortured them. And the funny part is if you really looked at them, they were pretty happy, these guys. But the ego, what will happen is with some time sober, and at that time I had like 5 years sober, I wasn't open to a message. I wasn't open to what they had to say. And you know, because in my, you know, ego-driven recovery program, I thought I had something here. And I remember when I came to AA, those old-timers, once in a while they would say something that I would hear. And one of the things was, always remain teachable. You know, always be open to a message in AA. And what happened was, my mind shut, and I thought, I'm cool. Insane. Remember, I'm in a locked facility. It's 3.5 years sober. And I don't want to hear what people had to say in AA. And I didn't even talk about my drinking. It's amazing, isn't it? I picked up a drink when I was 12 years old. And here's the thing. Like, I grew up in a house. My parents have way too many kids. Truthfully, this looks like my kitchen table growing up, this one table. I'm not kidding. It looked like the Last Supper, and we had to eat in 2 shifts, right? I have 13 brothers and sisters. I know, man. I always feel like I could just say that and leave, and you guys would all understand. You got it. And 7 of them were brothers. And, man, I hated my life. It was like leftover dinners, hand-me-downs. Christmas was the biggest ripoff I ever experienced. I hated my life. I never got what I wanted. And if I got it, it wasn't a brand name. It was some Bobo, like crap, my, you know. Cheated. My whole life I've been cheated. I'm not kidding, Dave. And my battle cry, my friend used to say, was, what about me? You know? Like, nobody even heard me talk. If I didn't come home for dinner, my parents would be like, good, more for us. You know what I mean? Like, they had so many mouths to feed. It was insane. And here's the thing. Like, I had really good parents. They worked so hard. And they both had, like, amazing work ethic. And my dad worked for Sears. He was a truck driver. And 45 years he worked the same job and he missed 2 days of work. And like, I that's amazing to me. Because I don't know about you, but when I drank, I could never show up for work. You know, I couldn't hold a job, I couldn't tell the truth, but that was, you know, when it started to progress. But, you know, I picked up a drink and like I said, I had good parents. We all went through 12 years of Catholic school, every one of us, and they worked really hard, and they never had things in life because their whole life was going to church and taking care of their kids, and I don't remember being grateful. I don't remember being nice to my parents. I remember just being so desperately unhappy my whole life, and not knowing what was wrong with me. I just thought, like, I got dealt a pretty bad hand. Like, how did I get stuck in this gene pool? I used to think, I was hoping I was adopted, and my real parents would show up one day and pick me up, and they'd be really rich. Never happened. I was always hoping that. Anyhow, so I picked up a drink, and I had no idea what I was up against. And here's the thing, like, you know, it's really cunning, this illness. And I was graduating high school. I barely made it through high school. You know, I keg parties and all that stuff. It seemed like I was doing everything that all the other kids were doing. Cool kids, anyhow. And I got out of high school, barely. And my friends were making plans for their life. They were going to college and you know, starting bank accounts and actually getting jobs. And I said, I'm going to Wildwood, New Jersey for the summer. I'm going to be a chambermaid. That lasted about three bathrooms I cleaned and I was done. You know, I got right into the restaurant business right after that. And for me, it seemed like everyone in the restaurant business drank, and they drank hard, and they even give you an after shift drink. What a job! And that's the thing. I'm still in the restaurant business, but that's a whole other story. But I got in this business, and it seemed like everybody's drinking. And the thing with this is, when you're around people that drink like you, it's really hard to take a look at your drinking. Until you step back into the real world where people don't drink like that, and they're like, what's the matter with you? My sister's like, you haven't been home in weeks, you know? Like, your hair sticking up, you know, you still have makeup on from 3 days ago. I still got a waitress uniform on, and it's, you know, I can't show up for work. I can't tell the truth. I'm losing jobs. One summer in Wildwood, I had 14 jobs. What's the summer? Like 2.5 months long, 3 months. So unmanageability was starting to set in really early. And I honestly, like, I didn't know anything about, you know, I just drank because that's what we did and that's what I thought I did. And then it starts progressing. And here's the thing, like, I had a family that loved and cared about me, and I always had a big sister that always took care of me and bailed me out of everything, and she started to be concerned, I'll say, about my drinking, and then she started to become baffled by my behavior. And the thing is, I drank with my sister, but she could go home. She can get up and go to work the next day. She can hold a job. She didn't lie. She never lied. She was always telling the truth. I couldn't keep a lie straight in my head. It was so insane. And like, I, you know, like, it never occurred to me that I never tell the truth about anything. It was just so insane. And I was terrified my whole life. I was riddled with fear and didn't know what was wrong with me. Because if you would approach me with a drink in my hand, I was pretty cocky. You know, I sat at this kitchen table and I used to say to my mom, don't let them stare at me. My brothers had them stare down contests, you know. And I was so scared. And I took a drink and it seemed like I was like, what are you looking at? You know, like, my whole attitude changed. And, you know, drinking, like, I was 16 years old, and my sister was a bartender, and I'm drinking in a bar in Philly. And, like, right there, you know, ego is like, I had arrived. 16, drinking in a bar. And, you know, I always have fake IDs because I had all these older sisters and brothers. And I hung in bars, and I loved it. Poker, you know, the poker machine and, you know, just insane stuff going on in bars. And it's like, it's almost like you can't even, like, sometimes you have a clue, like, something's not right with you. It's almost like I didn't really know the truth about my drinking until I was sober. And I was sober a long time before I could even look at myself. You know, that was the thing about this illness. I could never see the truth about myself. I can never see how I had harmed people. I can never see how I affected people, how I was running through people's lives, taking money out of their purse, stealing from my parents, my mom's credit cards, her jewelry be missing. And that's the thing, the great thing about having seven brothers. There's always someone else to blame. And there was always someone worse than me. So I can never see myself if that's, the case. And so my drinking was getting worse. And I can't hold a job. And my sister, my big sister, she was always taking care of me. She came to my parents' house one day, and she knew I was in trouble. I was in trouble, I'll just say. And she knew it. And she came to help me. She came to my parents' house one day, and I was covered in bruises, and I was pretty malnourished, and I hadn't slept or eaten in about 3 years. And she said, "Here's the deal. You're going to get in the car and you're going to move in with me." And I said, "For what?" And she said, "You either do this or we're going to go tell mom and dad you got a drug problem." And I never wanted to hurt my parents. And so I packed my bag and I moved to Fishtown. And on the way there, she was like, "Here's the deal. You can drink, but you can't do anything else." She goes, "Well, you can smoke some weed too." And on the way there, she picked up a huge bag of pot. And I pulled into Fishtown. And I was okay with these rules. Here's the thing. I can't. Yeah, right. I can live with this. And I can't manage my life, and so she's going to do it for me. And I owed a lot of people money, and she's like, "I'm going to give you a job, and I'm going to take your pay every week, and I'm going to pay everyone back, and you're going to get your shit together." And I'm like, "All right, sure." And it's amazing. I just kind of went with it because I couldn't deal with life. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to treat people. I didn't know how to talk to people. I couldn't do anything without a drink in my hand. And I was terrified because I didn't know what was wrong with me. And so I was going to let my sister run my life. And she's like a sergeant. So I was like, "All right, man." And we pulled into Fishtown. And it's like everybody sits out on their front steps. And they have like a cooler of beer. And they're on a beach chair. And it's like, wow, what? And so within 3 months of moving into my sister's house, I can't leave her third floor of her house because I was so paranoid and I couldn't leave the room that I was in. So let me tell you about the job she gave me. What a good sister. It was like the middle of summer and she threw me in a hot dog cart in Center City, Philadelphia. And it was like 120 degrees in this metal box. And I was detoxing. And I would lay on the soda cooler. My face on the cooler. Oh, it was so disgusting. And people would come up at like 7 o'clock in the morning. "I'll take a cheese dog." And I was like, "You gotta be kidding." I don't know about you, but I couldn't stand to be in my own skin. I felt like I was going to rip my skin off. It was just unbearable to be in my own skin. And so I would leave. I had to leave. And I would leave the card on the 10-day. Because I had to go. And my sister was not very happy about this part of my day. And I could never stay in the cart. And it was hot in there. And so I would leave. And I would, do my thing and come back. And I'd be all right. I'm all right now. Ready to make some hot dogs. And she would be there and she would be furious with me. "Where were you?" And I'd be like, "I was in the bathroom," 45 minutes later. And here's the thing, I'm always afraid to share this, but my family was pretty generous. And I would say just charitable, And my sister used to feed this guy every day and his name was Sam. I'm always afraid he's going to be in the room when I say this. But he was in the hot dog. My sister would be flipping out, and Sam would be in there, and she'd be like, "Where were you? Sam's in the cart," And I'm like, "He's done a much better job than me, He came up every day. Every day Sam showed up. Sometimes he'd bring a date or a guest. I don't know. And he wasn't all there. But he, it was crazy. And, you know, my sister, like, I was so mean to her, and I hated her so much. And I hated everyone, and I hated myself the worst. And she was like, "What's wrong with you? Where do you go?" You know, So anyhow, I was embezzling money out of the hospital card, and they were on to me. They set me up. You sausages, I don't know. They set me up. I got caught, and so. Swear to God, I just, you know, I saw a hot dog and put the money right in my pocket. It was nuts. And so they, you know, they went to get me some help. My family got me help, and here's the thing, I didn't even think I needed any, you know. Like, I knew something was wrong with me. I always knew that. I just didn't know what it was, and just thought my life sucks. And here's the thing, I had like all these ideas. If this would happen, then I would be better. If I had a new boyfriend, if I didn't work in a hot dog cart, if I had a car, I have all these things in my mind, you know, external things, then I'd be okay. And that's the thing about this internal condition. You can't treat it with external things. It doesn't work. It didn't work for me. And I tried it sober a long time. And so they had one of those meetings, you know, like you see on TV where they say, "We love you so much and we want to help you." They were like, "You're a piece of crap. You stole my Walkman. You took my credit card." They were all screaming at me. I hated that. Anyhow, they had like this counselor lady there, right? And she's like, she should go to 90 meetings in 90 days and go to AA and get a sponsor. And I was like, shut up, right? They're planning my life as if I'm not sitting at the same table, you know? And so my sister goes, wait a minute. Are you telling me my sister can't drink anymore? Well, this is the one who's like, she's ready to kill me. And she's been helping me my whole life. And lady's like, "Yeah, I don't think that's a good idea." And she's like, "Well, like if my cousin gets married, she can't drink at the wedding?" She's like, "Is your cousin getting married?" She's like, "It's hypothetical, lady." And the lady's like, "Well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it." She goes, "What about like New Year's Eve?" I said, "Yeah, everybody drinks on New Year's Eve. Like, I'm going to jump on this one." And she's like, "It's July, you know." And she's like, "Well," and then I don't think I never want to forget my sister. She just turned to me and she said, "Are you that far gone? Like, what happened to you? Are you that far gone? You can't even drink at a wedding? You can't have a beer?" She's like, "Where do you go? Like, you know, you've been missing. You'll be missing for days. You come home dirty and you lie all the time. You don't tell the truth. You hate us. You're stealing from us. Like, what happened to you?" And the truth is, I didn't know, like, what was wrong with me. And here's the alcohol kid, they were basically telling me I was getting sober and I didn't really have a choice. Like, and I'm thinking, yeah, I don't know who's getting sober here, and get off the sober thing. But, I thought I'll play along. And when everybody gets off my back, I can drink again. And God had a much better plan for my life. And that's the thing about God. Like, if you can just get out of your own way and let his plan unfold, it's pretty amazing. But here's the thing, I keep getting back in my own way. And next thing I know, I'm in a paper dress, eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, sitting in a detox. And this guy said to me, "Dude, you ought to go to rehab." And I was like, "Well, what do you know? What's your deal?" And he said, "I can't get sober." And it was the first time I think I ever heard anyone tell the truth about their drinking. And I said, well, what's your problem? What do you do? He said, this is my 17th detox. And I said, well, what, don't you got a life? What do you do? Go to detoxes? Like, I had such a great life laying in a hot dog cart, sneaking out at night, paranoid, stealing money. What, don't you got a life? And he was like, you want to go to Eagleville? They have a swimming pool there. And I really could use a vacation, you know. Besides, everyone wants to kill me, and I have drug dealers looking for me. I think I might do that, you know. So I packed two bathing suits, and I went to Eagleville High. I did. My mom was like, where do you think you're going? To a spa? I don't know if anyone else is planning on vacationing at Eagleville, but they didn't have a pool when I was there. Anyhow, I ended up in this hospital, and they talked about drinking. You know, I mean, they told us, like, they gave us tools. They talked about triggers and, you know, people, places, and things. And, you know, when you get out of here to go to a meeting and get a sponsor, and, like, pretty much they were throwing you into AA. And that's what I did. And I did it in my own mind to get my family off my back. But here's the thing about God is this guy in this detox, he said to me, you better start praying. And there goes the steps and everything else. And he said, you better start praying. If you have a chance here, any chance at all, you better start praying. And I did. And I probably, that was probably the only thing I had done consistently since I walked in the doors of AA. I started to pray. And I asked God to help me. And then I came to AA, and I want to say that I got restored to sanity in an AA room. I became convinced that I couldn't use alcohol safely in any form. You know, the doctor's opinion talks about alcohol strength for the effect that alcohol produces. You know, that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking that first drink. And I experienced that, like, you know, taking a drink and that, like, exhale, you know. And I was in AA for a long time, and I couldn't exhale. Like, I didn't know, like, what was wrong with me. I had never had anyone take me through the doctor's opinion. My first direction in AA was I should read Bill's story. And I said, I just seen the movie in rehab. Like, I don't need the movie. And it was just on, wasn't it, Hallmark? And, you know, so I wasn't like one of those people that came here and became real willing, you know. I hated AA. I hated it. And I thought, you know, how did I pick up a drink and get here? I mean, I was sitting in the middle of Kensington getting sober, and it was insane to me. And here's the miracle that God kept me sober anyhow. In spite of how arrogant I was, in spite of how cocky I was, in spite of how cut off I was, unwilling. And I believe now, looking back, that I was taking action. And that's probably, you know, what happened to me. I started chairing meetings. I started taking commitments. I started going to detoxes. I don't know what message I was carrying, but I was taking action, you know, and there's something to take in this action. This spiritual program of action, even though, like, I really didn't have a clue, I was still moving. I experienced a little self-pity in AA. Let me tell you how it went. My first solution, his name was Danny, and I met him in an AA room, and 2 weeks later, we love each other, and we're moving in, and my sponsor was not happy about it, and she was gay, and I thought, well, what could she possibly know about relationships, you know, and that's so arrogant. But I didn't, you know, that's how I thought when I got here. And I'm not, I hope I don't offend anybody, but that's how I thought. And I was young. And so we moved in, And a couple months later, he picked up and he robbed, you know, he took everything I had or thought I had and owned. And I said, maybe you should move back in that halfway house I drug you out of. And so he did. And 3 weeks later, he married my best friend. Welcome to resentment. Love it. I was insane sober. And God, that was painful. You know, and that's the thing, like, I was in so much pain for a lot of years in AA. And people would say, like, you know, pain is necessary, suffering's an option or some crap. And I'd be like, I want to die. I'm sober. I want to die. And they'd be like, yeah. Just go to this meeting. Just take a commitment. You know, double up on your meeting. I'm like, didn't you hear me? I want to die. I want to kill myself. You know, and you should get a good book and take a bubble bath. And I was like, I'm going to drown myself in the tub. And like, I had a head that would not stop. It was just, I was plotting people's death like at Wawa, you know, like I couldn't get a grip. And here's the thing, like, I couldn't get out of it. I didn't know there was a way out. I didn't know there was a solution, a design for living. Nobody was talking about it, you know, and maybe they were. I wasn't hearing it. Like I said, my little brother walk in a room with a big book and we'd be making fun of him, you know? And that's how I started, you know, that's how I ended up in a mental hospital and, like, you know, very untreated. You know, and here's the thing, people will start to, you know, give you their own little spin on what's wrong with you in AA, and I wasn't hearing anybody talk about a solution. In fact, I didn't see anybody work with alcoholics the way I see people today. It's amazing to me, and it's amazing to me. I had a new experience a couple years ago in AA, and pain, usually that's it. And I asked God for help, which I always do when I'm in pain. I don't know about you. God, please help me. And I had written an inventory, and I asked a guy to sponsor me. And this was a guy, he had 3.5 years sober, and I was 18 and a half years sober. And I said, you got to help me. Because I was so full of resentment, and that's the thing, like, in AA. I'm not always growing along spiritual lines. And so I started to meet all kinds of people that were really, really working with alcoholics and doing this deal, and it was just mind-blowing to me. I want to say this. So I had a few solutions, and my second solution was Michael. I met Michael in an AA room, and I want to say I always talk about him because 2 weeks later we love each other and we're moving in. This was a year after the other one married my best friend, and the amazing part is I saw that same sponsor and she was like, "Are you kidding me?" You know. I can't recall the pain. I couldn't bring it back with sufficient force, you know, and I'm in another relationship because that's what I thought you did in AA. And we moved in and I lived with this guy for 2.5 years and after a couple months he picked up and he never got sober. So I lived with someone who was shooting dope in my living room for 2.5 years in AA. And I'll tell you, a bad spot to be in AA is to come to AA and not be able to tell the truth and be afraid that you're so judged here in AA that you're not even be able, like your ego won't even let you tell somebody what's going on in your life. And I lived with him for 2.5 years and my life was probably crazier sober than it was when I was drinking because I couldn't tell the truth and I was dying in AA. I was terrified and my life was crazy. Like, I'd come home, he'd be laying in the oven, he was always going to kill himself. Like, it was just nuts, my life, and, Jesus. And I share this experience because I feel like I never want to forget that when he would come to AA, once in a while, he would try to get sober, and I don't remember him being greeted with kindness. I remember people saying to him, "Are you going to get it this time? Are you, you know, what are you going to do different now, Mike?" Like, as if they got something. Nobody sat down and took them through these steps. Nobody sat down and explained the doctor's opinion to them, you know. And I think I'm in an AA now that not only would people help them, but they could. That they have a solution, that they're walking shoulder to shoulder. And they're armed with facts about themselves, that they've had experience here. And I came home from work one night and found Michael dead on my living room floor. He was 29 years old, and he just couldn't find peace. He couldn't get sober. And the sad part is that when he came to AA, he just thought, I'm not going back there, because he felt so judged. And so if there's new people here, and, you know, there's people here that can help you, that will help you. And it's so important for us as alcoholics, recovered alcoholics, that are members of this society, to put our hands out to people, to welcome people in AA. And you don't think that's, like, you know, really doing anything, but I'm an active member of my home group. I'm general chair of my group. And if someone walks in the room that I've never seen before, I walk across the room because someone did it for me. And I say, hey, you doing, man? You want a cup of coffee? Like, and I don't always get, like, a warm fuzzy. They're like, what's up? You know. Kensington, Fishtown, we'll talk, you know. But there are some people that remember that. And I give them a big book. And I try to hook them up with somebody. You know, I'm not always available. But I'm in a sponsorship family that somebody's going to help this person. And that experience was important, I guess, for me to learn. It was an important lesson that, you know, I hear, like, things in AA that blow me away. You know, I always hear about the newcomer, you know, and I say, welcome home. That every alcoholic that walks in the door, we hope you find recovery. We hope you find peace. And I always think about the guy in the first 30 days, and somebody said, what about the guy in his last 30 days? My sponsor said that one time, and I thought, wow. You know, how many times is that person with multiple years sober sitting in AA? And so messed up. And the ego don't even let you, you know, like, tell anyone or think that you're that messed up. And so I experienced the steps, and I, you know, I'm trying to fast forward. And I was helping, you know, I was sponsoring people, and I'm in my, you know, church basement meeting. I'm in my home group, and, I have a few sponsees and some time. And so, you know, you think you're doing this deal. And a few years ago, here's the thing. If you ever want a lot of fear and a lot of resentment, open a restaurant with your family. And that's what I did. And I opened this restaurant with my family. And I never ran it by God. I pretty much told him I was down. You know, I never, like, asked God, what did he think? And so about a year into it, my sister and my sister-in-law had said to me that they couldn't stand the sight of me, that I was absolutely unbearable to be around. And you know, they were telling the truth. Like, I would walk in this restaurant, I was agitated, restless, irritable, discontented was like an understatement. And just out of my mind, and was in a lot of financial insecurity, and I just remortgaged my house without running by God. Still can't manage my own life, but think I can. And now I'm out of my mind with just crazy. And I wrote this inventory, and that's when I went and asked this guy to sponsor me. And I recognized that he was free. I recognized, you know, you can see it in someone when they're living this. And he said, wow, I don't know. You're sober a really long time. I said, shut up. You're going to sponsor me. I need your help. And he said, did you ever hear the set-aside prayer? And I said, no. What's that? And he said, well, we're going to say it. If you want me to sponsor you, we're going to say this prayer. And it was basically, we were asking God to set aside everything that I thought I knew about myself, AA, God, the 12 steps. And I said, all right. So I said this prayer, and I had a brand new experience in AA. And I remember a couple months later, I said to him, man, I feel like I'm having a new experience in AA. He's like, you said this set aside for him. But I had a lot of resentments, and they were all pretty justified. You know, my sister, the money, the restaurant. And I was, you know, I love when I have resentments that I want other people to jump on them with me, and he wasn't going for it. He said to me, do you want to be happy or do you want to be free, Claire? And I said, I want to be both. Jack was talking about, I want to be both. He goes, yeah, well, don't work like that. He said, I want you to go to this restaurant every day, and I want you to be nice, and I want you to do the dishes. And I was like, really? Are you kidding me? And he was like, no, I'm not. And I took his direction, and a couple months later he said to me, how's that working for you? I said, I just had lunch with my sister today. You know, like, resentments will cut me right off from people. It's just crazy. And so about 2 months later I started to get spiritual direction from this nun. And I went to her one day and I said, sister, you know, we're out of money. And I don't know what to do about this restaurant. I'm terrified. And she said, did you ever talk to God about it? No. What do you think? And she said, I want you to go sit in this chapel and talk to God. And I went into this little chapel and I said to him, I'm out of money and I'm out of ideas. And I have no idea what you want me to do. If you want me to just close the door and walk away, I'm going to trust that that's what I'm supposed to do. And if you want me to stay open, I need a sign. And I said, look, God, a big sign. Not like, let me get a reservation for four people. No, a big sign. I'm not kidding, right? Like, I'm telling God. And I was so lost. And I left the chapel, and 4 hours later, I walked into the restaurant, and we got a phone call. And it was a reality TV show. And the premise of the show is that they help restaurants that are in trouble, and they come in. So ridiculous. And this, you know, world-renowned chef basically screams at you for a week, and it's kitchen nightmares. And they called and said somebody had anonymously nominated us for this show. And would I be interested? And I thought, wow, that's my sign. I didn't actually think I'd be picked and hysterically crying on national TV. And this January that just passed, we were season premiere of Kitchen Nightmares. And we were the only restaurant in Philly that got picked. So when I tell God, like, in a big way, be careful what you pray for. Remember that one? Yeah, man. If I could just get out of my own way. And sometimes, you know, I think God's not answering my prayers because he's not answering them when I want them and how I want them answered. You know, and he's here all the time with me. But I'm so blocked off by him some days, you know. And I think I should come up here 21 years sober and tell you, you know, like, my life is great and financially I'm secure and that's just not the way, you know? And it's not the way is because I'm relying on self on a lot of days. And when I do that, it's not good. You know, I get to work with a lot of alcoholics and I'll tell you, it is the bright spot of my day. It's amazing to me. And I'll tell you, for years and years and years in AA, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, an active member, I really thought AA was about me getting mine. Let me get my stuff in order, then I'll go do the stuff that God wants me to do. That was my thing in AA, and I had it completely backwards. And this sponsor that I asked God to help me, God, I need help. This sponsor, like, real clear said to me, the minute you open your eyes, Claire, say, God, help me be useful to you. And I was like, are you kidding me? You know, and once I did that, it was like I had a new experience. And I'm like, I can't pack another thing in my day. You know what I mean? Phone ringing and, you know, and that's the thing about, like, really live in this program, you actually answer your phone. You know what I mean? You're available. You're sponsored. You're hooking people. It's like, ah! And some days I'm like, all right, God, easy, you know. What more do you want from me? What about me? you know, and I'm free. And I experienced peace. And I had never experienced peace. In a lot of years in AA, I hadn't experienced peace. I didn't know what people were talking about. I was like, yeah, right. Like, I thought peace looked like a new car or, you know, new boyfriend. And, yeah, not even close. And I don't know. I'm just amazed. It was that simple. And I had it backwards for so long. I really did. And once I started to, in a sense, go to work for God, my life became full. And I had joy. And I heard people from the podium talk about happy, joyous, and free. I thought, that's full of crap. You know what I mean? Because I was always, always relying on self. You know, I would ask God for help. I would pray to God, and I thought I had a connection with God. I was sober. I was sober a long time. I just, you know, I was like buried in a plate, like, you know, eating like crazy, spending money, shopping sprees, and always solutions outside of myself and not having a clue what people were talking about. And I'm just so grateful that I had a brand new experience in AA. So, you know, that's what happened to me. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I don't know when that happened because I hated it here. And but I know where it happened, and that was in AA. So I'm so grateful. I have no desire to drink or get married today. And that's all.